hypothesis of the real world. The belief in an objectively existing, independent universe is a strongly ingrained unconscious assumption that still holds sway deep in the recesses of most people's unconscious minds. The philosopher and mathematician Alfred North Whitehead refers to mistaking an abstraction for a concrete fact as the fallacy of misplaced concreteness. It is helpful to inquire into how this fallacy of misplacing concreteness onto a universe that is anything but solid can potentially hold sway over and entrance our minds in a way that translates into creating real problems in the world. The Dalai Lama tells the story of asking his friend and one of his scientific gurus, physicist David Bohm, what is wrong with a belief in the independent existence of things, apart from that it does not accurately represent the true nature of our situation. His Holiness relates, his response was telling. He said that if we examine the various ideologies that tend to divide humanity, such as racism, extreme nationalism, and the Marxist class struggle, one of the key factors of their origin is the tendency to perceive things as inherently divided and disconnected. From this misconception springs the belief that each of these divisions is essentially independent and self-existent. Bohm is pointing out that having a misconception of a situation leads to a mistaken belief that what we are seeing, in this case, division among people, independently objectively exists on its own, which is a deluded perception that leads to all sorts of problems. His Holiness commented on Bohm's response, "I wish there were more scientists with his understanding of the interconnectedness of science, its conceptual frameworks, and humanity." Falling under the spell of our own mind's power to create images and then thinking that our viewpoint is non-negotiably true, be it our point of view about a particular issue or about the entire universe, is at the root of much rigid ideology and man-made destruction. By becoming entranced by our own mind, we become self-righteously convinced that we are in possession of the truth. This can easily inspire crusades to convert the unenlightened, as has been tragically evidenced throughout history again and again. It should be noted that the same underlying psychological dynamic that causes us to misconstrue the nature of the apparent physical universe also causes us to divide and polarize among ourselves. This then causes us to create different factions within society with irreconcilable differences that appear to be objectively real, thus creating the preconditions for endless internecine conflict and war. Referring to what he calls the hypothesis of the real world, Schrödinger writes, "Without being aware of it, and without being rigorously systematic about it, we exclude the subject of cognizance from the domain of nature that we endeavor to understand. We step with our own person back into the part of an onlooker who does not belong to the world, which by this very procedure becomes an objective world. In excluding from the world the subject of cognizance, we pay, in Schrödinger's words, a high price, as we are removing life from nature, turning it into a corpse, creating a dead image from a living universe. At the same time, we are reducing a part of ourselves to be a simulation of this same inanimate matter that has nothing to do with our essential sentient spirit. In excluding ourselves from the universe, materialist reductionist science is first destroying the world in theory before proceeding to destroy it in practice. In writing ourselves out of the script of this world, science is precluding any possibility of experiencing our true nature, thereby negating our power to make any real difference in the world. In excluding ourselves from our image of nature, we are, by this very procedure, in the same moment conjuring up the appearance of an objective world, which we then take to be both self-existing, mistaking the appearance to be the thing itself, and an unquestioned given. These two processes reciprocally and synchronously co-arise and mutually reinforce and condition each other. This is actually one process with two interrelated and mutually self-reinforcing aspects. We do two things simultaneously, construct the world of objects and exclude from it the subject of cognizance, ourselves. Like two sides of the same coin, fabricating the image of an objective world out there and identifying as a separate self in here, reciprocally co-arise and co-generate each other. The hallucination of a solid objective world that exists independently of a subjective observer is the projection of a mind entranced by its own intrinsic ability to creatively and effortlessly conjure up how it experiences things. To think of the world as objective is to conceive of the world as being not I. When we think the world objectively exists, we, as the other half of this process, dream ourselves up to be a separate subject, an I separate from the not-I, who encounters the world as an object. The world as object, with ourselves as subject, reciprocally co-arise, co-evoking, and co-conditioning each other. To say the same thing from the other point of view is just as true. When we think we exist as a subjective reference point in time, we dream up the world as object. This process is non-linear, synchronic, circular, and takes place outside of time, instantaneously, in no time at all, which makes it hard to see. To quote the Dalai Lama, "Thus, there are no subjects without the objects by which they are defined. There are no objects without subjects to apprehend them." Scientist and philosopher Francisco Varela reminds us, "This grasping after an inner ground is itself a moment in a large pattern of grasping that includes our clinging to an outer ground in the form of the idea of a pre-given and independent world." In other words, our grasping after a ground, whether inner or outer, is the deep source of frustration and anxiety. Becoming fixed in a perspective that views humans as subjectively existing apart from the world, or the world as objectively existing outside of ourselves, are both forms of grasping, which, according to the insights of Buddhism, is the root cause of suffering. This brings to mind what William James calls the fantastic laws of clinging, which can be understood to underlie the very process of how we participate in creating both our mental and physical worlds in the way that we do. James is naming an internal process in which a multitude of related ideas and streams of thought intermingle and cling together, in his words, weaving an endless carpet of themselves. As if having a life of their own, these ideas hang together like a persistent entity. This inner process is a reflection of how we dream up our world to appear as if it is a persistent entity that exists in an objective fashion. As one of its chief features, the universe has built into itself the potentiality for self-awareness. We cannot escape the fact that the world we know is constructed in order and thus in such a way as to be able to see itself, says mathematician G. Spencer Brown. But in order to do so, evidently it must first cut itself up into at least one state which sees, and at least one other state which is seen. Out of its wholeness, the world splits itself into subject and object so as to objectify itself to itself in order to be seen as an object and therefore known. Spencer Brown continues, "In this severed and mutilated condition, whatever it sees is only partially itself. We may take it that the world undoubtedly is itself, that is not distinct from itself. But in any attempt to see itself as an object, it must equally, undoubtedly, act so as to make itself distinct from, and therefore false to itself. In this condition, it will always partially elude itself." Without a break in the coherent symmetry of simply being fully itself, however, the true nature of being would have no way to encounter and become aware of itself. This is similar to light transforming aspects of itself into particles so as to reveal its potential in a new way. Severing itself into subject and object, the true nature of being becomes false to itself, invariably eluding itself like an ever-receding rainbow until the correlation, interconnection, and ultimate inseparability of the subjective and objective domains of our experience are recognized. Jung writes, "The division into two was necessary in order to bring the one world out of the state of potentiality into reality." This is analogous to psychological reality. When we are unconsciously identified with the content of the unconscious, the only way we have of becoming conscious of it is to project the unconscious content outside of ourselves, where it gets dreamed into form, and see it objectively outside of ourselves as it appears in the seemingly external world. This is why Jung points out that the unconscious always approaches us from outside of ourselves. Hopefully, we can then recognize that what we are seeing out there is a reflection of what is in here, which is when we can take back and own, becoming conscious of, the projected content as ultimately belonging to ourselves. It should be noted that this dynamic is how the process of dreaming works. In dreams, our unconscious projects itself into the seemingly externalized dreamscape, where we then interact with these unconscious parts of ourselves. Teleologically, the ultimate aim of this process is to work something out, to potentially recognize these unconscious aspects as our own reflections so as to integrate them within ourselves. Dreaming ourselves up to be subject to the world, we truly suffer from a case of mistaken identity, unnecessarily limiting ourselves in the process. We then give away our intrinsic power, having disconnected from our sovereignty and creative potency to call forth our experience of both the world and ourselves. Dissociated from our own creative agency, the world then seems to create our experience for us, with ourselves playing the role of the passive and oftentimes victimized witness. Seeing the world in this disempowering way, we then dream up all the evidence we need to prove to us the rightness of our point of view in a self-fulfilling prophecy that further alienates us from one another, our world, and our true selves. Science, which it should not be forgotten is made by man, always contains implicit statements, be they right or wrong, about the nature of humanity. The contemporary scientific worldview that still reigns throughout the civilized world is particularly deadening and lacking an awareness of the sacred, world-shaping creative power that lies dormant within the human soul. Additionally, thinking we are seeing the world objectively appears to turn us into objects as well, an operation which ultimately immobilizes our human potential, hinders our compassion, and kills the soul. When we think the world objectively exists independent of ourselves, we are distorting our image of the world, which is a process by which we can't help but distort our image of ourselves at the same time, since we are inescapably part of the world. Speaking about this process, Schrödinger writes, "I conclude that I myself also form part of this real material world around me. I, so to speak, put my own sentient self, which had constructed this world as a mental product, back into it." We construct the world out of our sensations, perceptions, and memories, and then, as if making a collage, glue our made-up and ultimately unreal image of ourselves, which is similarly a function of our creative imagination, into the seemingly real scene that surrounds us. We have then reduced our idea of ourselves to a similarly objectified concept that corresponds in type to the nature of the rigid concepts by which we frame our understanding of the objects of the seemingly objective physical world. The illusion of external reality is so convincingly real that it produces a strongly held, concurrent belief that there is an inherently real psychological center of operations, a subjectively existing reference point and center of volitional action within us, our ego, our sense of individual self, which then reciprocally feeds back into the illusion of an inherently existing outer reality in a potentially infinitely self-perpetuating feedback loop. We have then fallen prey to what David Bohm calls an illusion generating illusion. To quote Bohm, "The key to sanity is to see through this basic illusion generating illusion. If we don't see through this process, we can then easily remain unaware of the creative power within us, a power that is being blindly misused to create the very illusion in which we become trapped. Our creative power, wherein lies our potential gift to the world, is nevertheless always present within us. But if it is not seen and consciously engaged with, it can be used against us to generate the illusion that we have little creative power." Expressing the essence of quantum physics, as well as the central tenet of Buddhism, Niels Bohr commented that an independent reality, in the ordinary physical sense, can neither be ascribed to the phenomena nor to the agencies of observation. What Bohr says is so profound that it warrants highlighting. Quantum physics is showing us that we can't ascribe an independently existing reality, not to the outer world or to the agencies of observation, us. In other words, we don't exist in the way we have been imagining we do, if we have been imagining we exist as independent, objectively existing agents separate from the universe. Jung writes, "One is oneself the biggest of all one's assumptions." Quantum physics, thus, not only challenges the nature of what we call reality, it calls into question our very sense of who we are. Wheeler comments in his own inimitable style, "We may someday have to enlarge the scope of what we mean by a who." It is one thing to recognize that this universe doesn't exist in the way we've been imagining it does. It is quite something else to recognize the inner correlate of this realization. We ourselves don't exist in the way we've been imagining. To the extent that we're unconsciously identifying with a self-constructed model for who we are, instead of recognizing and simply being who we are living a lie. We are then negating the truth of our existential situation, which leads to a state of delusion. Quantum physics, when contemplated deeply enough, can completely unravel our illusory sense of self in a way that to the ego can feel like the most frightening thing of all, like some sort of death experience. This is the edge that quantum physics is forcing its practitioners to confront within themselves, an edge which is at the bottom of the unconscious creation of the aforementioned don't-go-there zone in physics. Realizing that the world doesn't exist objectively and is not made up of separate things has another corresponding half. The realization of the absence of the objective world occasions the realization that we, as alleged subjects of this realization, have nothing to be subjects in relation to. This is to say that the idea, which is just a thought in our mind, of ourselves as subjects separate from and encountering the world as an object, spontaneously revisions itself. This revisioning entails the discovery of ourselves to be a field of pure immaterial awareness without any edges, borders, boundaries, or features. Freed of its unnecessary and limiting identifications, this awareness naturally recognizes itself in everything that it beholds. This process of objectifying both the world and ourselves veils the real subject within us, which is something other than our self-fabricated ego. Jung writes, "Every science is a function of the psyche, and all knowledge is rooted in it. The psyche is the greatest of all cosmic wonders and the sine qua non, indispensable condition of the world as an object. It is in the highest degree odd that Western man, with but very few and ever fewer exceptions, apparently pays so little regard to this fact. Swamped by the knowledge of external objects, the subject of all knowledge has been temporarily eclipsed to the point of seeming non-existence. The subject of all cognizance, the part of us that is perceiving the world, is who we truly are." In Schrödinger's words, "Our perceiving self is nowhere to be found within the world picture, because it itself is the world picture. Our picture of the world reflects ourselves." The root meaning of the word psychology is the study of the psyche and the soul. We can conceive of the soul as a vital animating core of luminosity, sentience, and aliveness, the very thing that links us to the divine, to each other, and to the part of us that is most ourselves and most human. Finding our soul has to do with becoming conscious of our true identity and discovering our purpose for living. The soul can't be explained. It is the soul itself which is the principle informing every explanation. But we know it when we experience it, as when we meet people who are connected with their own soul. We can conceive of the soul as being more like a perspective than a substance. It informs our way of seeing rather than being something seen. The soul can never have knowledge of objective reality, for it and we are not objects. The soul can only know what it is. To realize that we do not exist in the way we have been conditioned to believe is to have a radical phase shift on our sense of reality and identity, crossing an event horizon in our mind in which figure and ground reverse themselves. This is not only a realization which takes place in the psyche. It necessarily involves finding ourselves within and enveloped by psyche. Jung comments, "The psychical is no longer a content in us, but we become contents of it." From all appearances, the psyche is spilled outside of our skull and is synchronistically informing and giving shape to the outside world. Instead of the psyche being within our brains, just like in a dream, we discover ourselves to be inside of the psyche. We and our world thus become ensouled. To quote writer Jorge Luis Borges, "We, that indivisible divinity that operates in us, have dreamed the world." This physical world is, as Sir Arthur Stanley Eddington calls it, mind stuff, which is to say that, just as within a dream, the stuff of this world is inseparable from the mind of the dreamer, which is us. In other words, to see that the world doesn't exist as an object out there, combined with seeing that we don't exist as an objective subject in here, is the doorway to the realization of the dreamlike nature of reality, which is the very realization that quantum physics is ultimately revealing to us.